this was indeed a neurological issue, a brain network disorder.
A possible explanation for alleged sonic attacks in China. It's Monday, September 3rd. This is VOA Asia. Hello, I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. We're also on Facebook at VOA Asia. Coming up, controversy and conundrum for Google in China. Climate change, a concern in the Pacific. Korean farming grows in Africa. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Doctors and scientists are now saying that unconventional weapons, possibly using microwaves, may have caused the symptoms and ailments reported by U.S. diplomats and their family members in Cuba and China. Initial results of some earlier research did not result in any substantial causes of the apparent attacks. At the request of the U.S. government, a medical team at the University of Pennsylvania examined many of the affected diplomats. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke with Douglas Smith, the study's lead author and director of the Center for Brain Injury and Repair at the University of Pennsylvania.
We were contacted by the State Department to take a look at this patient cohort, and so we agreed. I put together a team of experts in different disciplines, all around concussion type of treatment and evaluation, because that's what we surmise what the symptoms appeared like. We learned pretty early on that while some patients were in contact with each other, others were not. So if it were mass hysteria, in theory, everything would have to be kind of cross-pollinated or contaminated, that they'd share stories and develop a kind of a scenario and a kind of a storyline. But that was not the case here. So there are individuals who did not know what the other individuals were experiencing as far as symptoms. The other important thing is that these symptoms are kind of complex. So this is very much like concussion. We sometimes call it concussion without the concussion, meaning that these individuals had no history of a head impact and yet displayed very similar symptoms to somebody who has persisting concussion difficulties. And that's things like troubles with cognition, how quickly they think, how they can remember words, can come up with a word. As well as balance and visual problems that were very characteristic of this group. Now, some of those tests you can't actually fake. Whether it was conscious or subconscious, you can't fake some of these types of tests on the neurological exam. So one by one, independently, the specialists examining this patient group were convinced, and it's uniformly across everyone in our group, that this was indeed a neurological issue, a brain network disorder, and not a psychogenic type of change that originated because of some kind of mass hysteria type of event.
This has been reported, at least over the past couple of days, as being some kind of microwave attack. Did you confirm that?
No, we did not confirm that. So I think the New York Times ran a piece that it seemed like a primary suspect to us. But on our side, we're not really the energy people. So we are aware of an extensive literature where people have used different types of energies and directed them at the brains of animals in experimental studies and find that almost everything they test does cause a brain injury. And the list is not really long, and microwaves are on that list as part of a radio frequency exposure.
Are you aware of any such weapons, or whatever you would like to call it, that are in existence?
There are weapons that maybe could cause pain with microwaves, a burning sensation, which was not the case for this patient cohort. So, again, this is not my area of expertise, but a lot of the energy sources, there always seems to be some kind of problem. From a medical perspective, we would be very curious of why it's selectively the brain and not peripheral nerves, not, tissue outside of the brain.
Is this damage uniform enough among your sample to come to the conclusion that a certain type of weapon or something that was similar, both in Cuba and China and maybe elsewhere, has been used?
We are currently evaluating what we call advanced neuroimaging to look at these brain pathways to see if there is a signature type of change in the brain. We're also joining with the National Institutes of Health to have what we call replication studies, so they can also look at the clinical data and neuroimaging to see if they concur and that we can work together on looking forward of developing what we would call an operational diagnostic criteria that we could, based on these different pieces of evidence, determine the specific signature of this this newfound disorder.
Dr. Douglas Smith, the study's lead author and director of the Center for Brain Injury and Repair at the University of Pennsylvania, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. A State Department official told VOA the health and well-being of our personnel remains our top priority. The investigation into the origin of these symptoms continues. The interagency community is working diligently to determine the cause of the symptoms, as well as to develop mitigation strategies. These are among some of the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Amid U.S. trade war, China's Xi reiterates reform commitment. The United Nations says number of people in China re-education camps could top 1 million. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also visit our VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. A group of 14 rights organizations, including Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International, has appealed to the giant search engine Google not to re-enter the Chinese market, amid reports it is preparing to launch a censored version 8 years after leaving the country. In their open letter to Google CEO Sundar Pichai, they warned a reversal of position would represent an alarming capitulation by accommodating what they call one of the world's most repressive internet censorship and surveillance regimes. In 2006, Google attempted to comply with China's censorship rules, but left the market in 2010. Now there are reports a new version of its search engine is being developed, designed to be compatible with China's stringent laws and regulations. Human Rights Watch Asia Director Brad Adams tells VOA's Victor Beatty it appears Google is prepared to sacrifice its stated goal of giving as much information as possible to as many people as possible.
And they're sacrificing the idea of a free and open internet. Once you make a compromise with one of the world's global powers, you're going to end up in a lowest common denominator scenario where China will become the new normal for many countries around the world. Google has market power and the following to say no to China, and therefore to say no to other smaller countries that don't have the same kind of leverage that China appears to now have over Google. So Google was able to do things like move its servers out of China to ensure that it was not ever subject to Chinese laws and then therefore Chinese orders to turn over material that they wouldn't turn over, for instance, in the United States. So we're going to have dueling internets. We're going to have a free internet for democracies, which will probably be slightly eroded over time as more authoritarian governments in the West try to argue that they should have the same access to information as China or the same right to censor. And then we'll have a highly regulated, controlled internet in China and other dictatorships.
Of course, Google hasn't confirmed its plans yet, but it's certainly a lucrative market, so it can hardly avoid not going back.
Google is already fabulously profitable. Its founders, Sergey Brin, who is a Russian immigrant, Larry Page, are gazillionaires. They have more money than anyone could ever spend in their lives. They do not need to make the extra money in China either as a corporation or as individuals. And they're sacrificing their principles and their reputation for, you know, as my family would say, a few shekels. And that doesn't make any sense. There's just no good reason to make this compromise.
Brad Adams said minutes of a meeting Sundar Pichai had with Google employees last week have been leaked and indicate a sizable number opposed to the reported move. He said many joined because of Google's founding motto, "Don't be evil." He said the company stands to lose a lot of good employees if it decides to re-enter the Chinese internet market, which he said is more censorious than ever. One of the South Pacific's longest-serving leaders has said that climate change is an existential threat to island nations. Samoa's prime minister has told a meeting in Australia that any world leader who denies the existence of climate change should be taken to a psychiatric facility. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Rising sea levels and erosion are threatening low-lying communities in the South Pacific. Some small islands have already disappeared in what many islanders consider to be the first signs that climate change has the power to overwhelm vulnerable areas. Speaking at the Lowy Institute, an independent think tank in Sydney, Samoa's Prime Minister Tualaipe Sailele urged Australia to make deeper cuts to its carbon emissions to help protect Pacific Island nations. Australia is still highly dependent on coal for power generation and has some of the world's highest per capita levels of greenhouse gas pollution. Sailele said that warming temperatures pose an existential challenge to low-lying islands. He also criticised world leaders who deny the science of climate change.
We all know the solutions, and all that is left would be some political courage, some political guts. And any leader of those countries who believes that there is no climate change, I think he ought to be taken to a mental confinement. He is utter stupid.
The long-serving Samoan leader also said that Australia's attitudes to the South Pacific had been patronising and said despite China's growing diplomatic and commercial influence, the independence and autonomy of regional states should be respected. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Coming up, South Korea's African farming legacy. You're listening to VOA Asia. This news from VOA Asia, police in central China have detained 46 people who were part of a protest against a government plan to address overcrowded classrooms that escalated into violence. Police in the city of Leyang in Hunan province say officers dispersed around 600 protesters who had gathered outside the local police station. Gather daily for the latest stories on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, South Koreans have left an agricultural legacy in Africa as young people are returning to farms in South Sudan to empower themselves through food production. The country has been devastated by 5 years of conflict, which has left the agricultural sector struggling to feed the nation. Faith Lapidus reports on a vocational center teaching the new farmers skills to help them fill that need.
It's harvest time at the Hanbit Agricultural Training Center. It was established in 2015 by South Korean peacekeepers of the UN mission in Bor, South Sudan. The students are enrolled in a 3-month course to learn the skills they'll need to run a profitable farm business.
It is something good because the knowledge that we have acquired here, we are going to do it there in the community. Because when we will be delivered here, we are going to open up our farms, we dig and we cultivate our crops. Therefore, if we sold those crops, we are going to earn money. And that is a self-employment.
The students have cultivated a fast-growing species of maize and a variety of other crops, including celery and cucumbers. They learned irrigation technologies and how to set up greenhouses.
Now we are farmers. We planted some crops that gave us a good yield. It's not like before. The peacekeepers have really helped us here in South Sudan. Each of us will go and farm in different villages and counties to help building the country.
Aid groups say almost two-thirds of South Sudanese will need food aid this year to stave off starvation and malnutrition blamed on famine and the civil war. Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. Find us online. You can download us from iTunes and SoundCloud. You can stream us on VOA Asia Facebook and, of course, our website at voanews.com. And as always, we want to hear from you. Contact us on Facebook or send us an email, voaasia@voanews.com. We'd like to thank everyone listening on the radio, PSU, Radio Patani FM 107.25 at Prince of Songkla University in Thailand. We appreciate you tuning in today. We always appreciate our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Zainab Abdel-Rahman, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Skylar Ogden, Ira Melman, and Doug Bernard. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day.